I just want to sing that song again. You know, there's a reason for doing uplifting secular songs in church. They're fun. And everybody smiled. And then we remember that we live in a both-and world. Some days it's hard, and some days it's fun, and in some moments it's exactly both. Okay, choir, could you do that again, please? Hello?
Hello.
Can you help me, please? I have a question. Don't look at me in that tone of voice, mister. If you could ask God one question, any question you want, what would it be? Go ahead, take that. You can take it.
To get my father and my grandma Nana back.
You would ask God for your father and your grandma Nana back. Whew, that's a big question. That's a really big question. Thank you.
I would do this one.
Why did you create us? Wow, you guys. Okay, anybody else? How about you guys? Oh.
If we're actually real.
If we're actually real. Let the people say. Those are great questions. You got any others? If you could ask God any question, your sister does she know that? Because she's shaking her head. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You'd ask for the same thing, Nana and Daddy. Okay, I understand that. That makes sense to me. So you'd ask for people that you love to be here? Yes.
How did you create life?
How did you create life? Okay. No. No. No, not at all. I know, right? What, do you have a question?
Yes. I want my grandma is on my house.
Your grandma's at your house?
No, it's on my grandma's house because I want to go home.
You want to go home? Okay. So that's what you would ask God if you could go home. That's really good. Now, you know I am not often left speechless. Okay, never. Anybody else? Actually, no. Hey, thank you very much. It would be nice if I had answers to those questions, wouldn't it? Do you think God has answers to those questions? No, you don't think so either? Those are big questions. And you know what? When I was growing up and I went to my minister and asked those questions, do you know that he would have answers for me? Would I be here? And they were not very satisfying answers. But I was told to just listen to what I was told and believe it. Does that satisfy you? If I tell you, if you ask me those questions and I said, because, would that be good enough? Because it's what God wants, would that be good enough? No? So if God said, it's because I said so, what would you say back to God? Why? Nicely done. You know, sometimes there's really no point to go on, except that I spent a lot of time on this. And so, since part of our faith is about suffering, here we are. Oh, my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways. It would be nice to know the answers to certain questions, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be great that if you had certain things, you could just know? Like, yesterday, we went shopping at Home Depot. Do you know that Home Depot, this is a sidebar, Home Depot was started by folks who were experts in their field and then retired and would come and help. And then the new CEO or whatever decided that they could pay less for people who really didn't know anything. And so that's who they hired. And so yesterday we went to Home Depot and we were talking about turf, you know, artificial turf, and could our dogs handle it? And we're going to call an expert. Great. So the expert comes over and starts telling me or answering me my questions. And he didn't know anything. He didn't know he didn't know anything. Right? And I would offer that I've known some clergy like that. Yes? Yes? Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And I've known some other people like that. Do you know people who think they know things and they're going to tell you? And what happens if you disagree?
You're wrong.
Right. You know, when I was in high school, I was a tad bit precocious. Why is that funny? And I remember, you know, you'd have health and sex education and religion were basically all the same thing, because why wouldn't they be? And I remember asking the nun who was teaching, with all due respect, well, not at the time, no, but today, with all due respect, I remember saying to her, so why is it that we're not allowed to do certain things before we're married? And if we do, why isn't it that we can't use these things to help us while we do the things we're not supposed to do before we're married? And do you know what she said? Yes. Because God doesn't want you to. Why not? Because the church says you can't. Why? Claire, see me after school. Something like that, yes. But do you remember that also in school we were taught there are no such things as dumb questions? Do you remember that? But how many of you grew up in a tradition where when it came to religion, you weren't supposed to ask beyond a certain point? Anybody? Oh, come on, more of you than that. I know. So here's my conundrum, because if we take a look at I'm going to sound so smart now, the scientific method, right? It allows for exploration or understanding of our world and our place in it, right? How many of you went through science class and enjoyed it? Yeah. I was a biology major, because it went with the religion and the health thing. We hypothesize a certain premise, right? You test that premise and you come up with a conclusion, and some conclusions remain hypotheses to be tested again later as we get more information. Some are disproven. Some have an addendum or an alternative. But the truth, even in science, is often evolving, right? So, for example, I looked this up today, very, very early this morning when I was up with a new puppy. So thanks, Aaron, for that memory. Aaron has a puppy back there, just in case. Did you know that there are other theories in terms of how the world got started besides Big Bang? Did you know that? I did not know that. There is one theory called the steady state universe. Now, stay awake if you can. It's an early rival to the Big Bang, and it posits continuous creation of matter throughout the universe to explain apparent expansion. The type of universe would be infinite with no beginning and end. However, a mountain of evidence said that that's probably not correct. Then there's the eternal inflation theory. Sounds like our government. After the Big Bang, the universe expanded rapidly during a brief period called inflation. And the theory posits that inflation never stopped. It's been going on for an infinite length of time. Somewhere even now, new universes are coming into existence. Ugh, this is overwhelming, into a vast complex called the multiverse. Then there's the oscillating model of the universe, evolved in an endless series of big bangs followed by big crunches that restarted the cycle. Endless. I have no idea. But there's a lot of stuff out there. And how do we find out which is correct and which isn't? We ask questions, correct? Because if we didn't ask questions, then I'm pretty sure we'd still be in the 6 days of creation place, right? I'm pretty sure leeches would be the medical procedure. And I'm pretty sure I would have been burned at the stake a long time ago as a heretic. But it would be nice if we could settle for some definitives, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be nice if somebody could just say, yes, absolutely, positively, this is true? Except what happens when we get into definitives? You isolate the other. Perfectly said. Because if I'm right, you're wrong. I'll love you anyway. But you're wrong. And it does. It tends to then isolate those that don't think and believe the way we do. And that sort of brings us to our sixth core principle that Richard Rohr has been offering, which is that life is about discovering the right questions more than having the right answers. Life is about having the right questions more than having the right answers. Now, this is interesting because some people will say Living the Questions, which is a great progressive theology series, would say that it's also about being okay with the questions when you can't find the answers. But I like Rohr's idea of needing to find out the right questions. So it's not just about being comfortable, but also figuring out which questions you're going to ask. This kind of came up this morning in our Percolate group, but I remember when I was in seminary, I took this Christian ethics class, right? Now, Christian ethics, that sounds definitive, doesn't it? If you're coming from the Baltimore Catechism perspective, it absolutely is. Or if you're coming from a literal fundamentalist perspective, it is most definitely definitive. But let me posit something to you. That sounded right. Posit, that was a good scientific word, right? Sounded good. There was, in a third world country, somewhere around India, a mother with an eldest daughter. Now, the question goes something like this. The family needed money, and so opted to sell the daughter to someone who would take them into their employ permanently so that they could have money. Is that ethical? Mother selling a child. How is it in that part of the world? How? So it's ethical. Okay, so it's ethical. That's okay. You don't have the answer. Okay. What else? Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. 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 Okay, so is it ethical? It is. Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Is it possible that it's ethical for the person making the decision and not for the
outside? Ooh, situational ethics, Brian, not definitive. Mm-mm. What else you got? So the second part of the story is very similar, right? The second part of the story is this is a mother who has six other kids that need to be fed, who would probably die if she did not sell her eldest daughter in order to feed these kids. Now, is it ethical? It's just, it is disturbing. Okay. So let's not talk about it anymore, right? No, I'm talking about Christian ethics. That's the name of the course. Stay with it, Christopher.
Yeah.
We're at Christian Ethics. This is a Christian Ethics course in a very liberal, progressive seminary. I'm not asking what you think they thought. I'm asking you, is it ethical? Well, what about the oldest kid who got sold? Is she going to survive? Will she? Are you sure about that? How do you know? Have you met the buyer? Okay. Six to one. Oh, so the greater good. Okay. I saw another hand. Yes, Jamie. Okay. Yeah, sure. Oh, no two questions. One question. Go ahead. Oh, shush. We either think of it as black and white, right or wrong, when we think of ethics. There's a right way or a wrong way. Okay.
I'm going to go with wrong because the girl didn't get to make the decision
herself. Oh, but if she did make the decision herself, okay.
Yes.
So, but what if she's a minor?
No.
What if she's seven and everybody under her? Okay.
No, that's sort of like age or kind of
relative. Okay. But isn't it up to the parent to make the decision for her? It's okay, I'm just being a pain. Anybody else? Ellen? Is it ethical for us to even ask the question? Good question. I saw another hand. Okay. Is it ethical for us to ask the question? I don't have an answer, people, just so you know. I don't have an answer. But what you just did was finding the right questions, okay? From a sociological perspective and what was been sort of framed from a Christian ethics perspective, because that was proposed to my class, is I don't know if we'll come up with the answer to that question. But rather than to sit in a place and say definitively, yes, it is, no, it isn't, look how you started asking the other questions, right? You took it to a different level. You started to struggle. And even though we needed to have a little bit of laughter in that, because that's a really hard thing to talk about, you were able to take it and find what the right questions are. Now, let me ask you this. Were you okay with that exercise? Not the content, the exercise. Why weren't you okay? Okay, so you're going to the end game?
Situation.
Okay.
It's just horribly sad that they would find themselves in that situation, and my struggle is how do we change that system or situation?
Oh,
or
look what you just did.
To help.
What did she? Right, it is. So what did she just do? Ask the next right question, right? Yeah. So that turned up something that left you dissatisfied because there was no definitive, and so you did the next thing, which was you asked the next question, right? Anybody else? Yes. Or happen again. Okay, so now we have two breaking into deeper levels, into systemic breaking down, correct? Okay. I have no doubt that if we continued along this particular topic and kept asking some questions, we would probably come up with some really good ideas, right? And you can use your brains to do that, right? You can kind of go through how to do this. So here's the next question. How come, when it comes to trying to figure out God, we don't ask the same questions? Nicholas.
How does God find us?
How do dogs find us? I'm going to divert here for a second. Because silly ladies like that one in the back by the sound system goes to places where they're adopting dogs out, and the dog looks at her and goes, I'll take you. And then she takes that puppy home with her. Did you see the puppy back there? There's a puppy back there. Yeah, yeah, the dog says, come here, lady. Yeah, so perfect example. When it comes to knowing the divine, why is it that we go on what everybody else tells us we should know about God? Why is it that we go on what everybody else tells us we should do as far as God's will? How many of you have actually had a conversation with the divine where you've said, hey, where are you? What do you want from me? What is it that you need for me to do? Tell me a little bit about yourself. How many of you had those conversations? This is a trick question, by the way. How many of you waited for the answers? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so if you are meeting somebody for the first time, how do you get to know them? Do you count on the previous person telling you about that person? Here's why you should marry them. Here's why you should be their best friend. Here's why you should let them live in your house. No, it's relational, right? We take the time to ask the questions, to get to know somebody, to understand them as best we can. We never can completely understand another person. But we try, right? But we only know that because we have a conversation, because we are in relationship, okay? Coming up with the right questions is about us exploring what questions it is we want to ask the divine. Rather than Claire telling you, here's what you should believe. Here's what you should know. And if you don't, guess what? That's okay. Jesus asked over 300 questions. 300 questions. Was asked, sorry. And he was asked 183. What is suggested by Richard Rohr is that he only answered 3 questions outright. The first question that he answered was, are you king? Now, you have to understand the context. This is out of John. And so when he answers, are you king, around that is also basically what that really means is, what was your role in this whole process of the incarnation of the divine? What is your role? Well, it's to show you the way. The second question that he is asked is, how do we pray? And of course, that question is asked with what we know as the Lord's Prayer. The third question that he is asked is, what is the greatest commandment? And it's in that commandment, you shall love your God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Right? In that, it's very definitive about the nature of God from Jesus' experience with God. Would you agree with that? I would also say that Jesus answered a fourth question. Maybe not verbally, but by how he lived. And it's sort of a subheading of that third one, right? Not only am I going to tell you about God and what the greatest commandment is, I'm going to show you how to do it. So from my perspective, he answered 4. The greatest question that he proposed to us is, how are you going to live your lives so that you can know the divine the way I do? How are you going to live into your lives so that you can know God the way I do? I'm going to show you, I'm going to demonstrate it, I'm going to teach you, and I'm going to challenge you, and I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. Never giving you answers, by the way. I'm just going to lead you. But what are you going to do in order to have that relationship with the divine? What is the first thing a person has to have for knowledge? What do you have to have? What? Okay, but how do you get the information? Curiosity. And then you ask the questions for the information. If you are not curious about God from your own perspective, but you're only curious about God because of what I can tell you or somebody else can tell you, then you are living vicariously through someone else's experience. Does that make sense? Curiosity. How many of you are curious about knowing God intimately? For those of you who haven't raised your hand, who is daring enough to say why or why not? Aaron. So you do have that. So you do want that intimate. Okay, so I'm asking for those who did not raise their hand about wanting that relationship, why not? How many are you scared? I'm not doing this as an example. I'm doing it to say I am, just so you know. Because once you get to know somebody, what happens? You change. You're connected. You're held accountable. You might fall in love. You might become intimate. There might be a commitment. Who would want that? This is a wonderful poem that I will end with. And this is done by Cynthia Kirk. She is a Methodist minister and part of the group that put together Living the Questions. And this is what she said. This is called Stripped by God. What would happen if I pursued God? If I filled my pockets with openness, grabbed a thermos half full of fortitude, and crawled into the cave of the Almighty, nose first, eyes peeled, heart hesitantly following until I was face to face with the raw, pulsing beat of mystery. What if I entered and it looked different than anyone had ever described? What if the cave was too large to be fully known, far too extensive to be comprehended by one person or group, too vast for one dogma or doctrine? Would I shatter at such a thought, perish from paradox or puzzle, shrink and shrivel before the power? Would God be diminished if I lived a question rather than a statement? Would I lose my faith as I discovered the magnitude of grace? Oh, for the willingness to explore, to leave my tiny vocabulary at the entrance and stand before you, naked, stripped of pretenses and rigidity, disrobed of self-righteousness and tiny packages, stripped of all that holds me at a distance from you and from our world. Strip me, O God, then clothe me in curiosity and in courage. And let the people say, Amen.